The following previews are of graphic audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
At the turn of the 22nd century, Brian Cotter and his band of post-nuclear Holocaust survivors are about to come face to face with a specter from the past.
What do they look like?
Hard to tell with all the dust. About 30 riders in a double column on horseback, blue uniforms with a yellow stripe down the side of the riding breeches. The guy in front's got a blue flag with a golden 7 on it.
Out of the swirling dust that was once New Mexico rides a regiment of pony soldiers, led by a man with flowing yellow hair.
By the three Kennedys, we've cron-jumped. That's General George Armstrong Custer and the 7th Cavalry.
Brandishing sabers, colts, and Winchesters, the horsemen intend to destroy the ragtag strangers and their newfound allies, a tribe of Apache Indians.
Company, fire!
Deathlands number 6, Pony Soldiers. For Ryan Carter and his companions, the Deathlands just got deadlier.
Deathlands number 6, Pony Soldiers, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting January 2006. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
In Deathland 71, Ritual Chill, amidst the howling winds of Alaska's frozen tundra, Dr. Theophilus Tanner finally went mad.
I am Joseph Jordan, prophet, seer, and you will hear me.
Which brought Ryan Carter and his companions to the brink of destruction.
Dark night. Ryan, we gotta get out of here.
Having narrowly escaped the chaos, they now find themselves caught between a war of two vills and face an enemy with strange and mysterious powers.
Christy, don't look into his eyes.
Gaia! Oh, oh.
And amongst it all stands Doc, stewing in his own madness.
The only reality I can trust is that which unfolds before me.
Betrayal looms in the air.
You!
You see too much. Time for your eyes to be dimmed.
Will Doc's madness send him plummeting over the edge? Will his insanity take the companions with him? And will he finally betray the friends who have saved his life too many times to count?
Just bide your time, Theophilus. Just bide your time.
Deathland 72, Atlantis Reprise, holds the answers.
Deathlands number 72, Atlantis Reprise, will be in travel centers and truck stops throughout North America starting January 2006. Or call 1-800-670-5220 to reserve or download your advance copy. For your convenience, this information is also printed on the cover of this book.
Graphic audio. A movie in your mind.
And now, our feature presentation. A 100 years ago, a rain of nuclear bombs obliterated civilization in a few minutes of blazing horror. It was the end of the world. Doomsday, sky dark. With the first nuclear explosion, the tissue-thin tapestry of civilization was ripped apart. The rule of law was replaced overnight with the somber, draconian edict of survival of the fittest. Cannibals hunted prey, cold hearts brutally raided farms, and slavers seized anybody they could as chattel. Electricity was seldom seen, starvation universal, rape a daily event, death the only known means of escape. This is America in the late 21st century. Welcome to the Deathlands. Graphic Audio presents James Axler's Deathlands. Narrated by Richard Rowan. With performances by Terence Hazelford, Colleen Delaney, Nanette Savard, Kate Torrey, David Coyne, Christopher Graybill, and Mort Shelby. Deathlands number 5, Homeward Bound.
It's dead.
Ryan Carter took the high image intensifier away from his good eye, tucking it back into one of the pockets of his long, fur-trimmed coat.
See anything?
Nope. From this eye, you can see for miles. Not a sign of life. When it's cold like this, there should be smoke. Folks gotta keep warm. There's enough wood around for 'em.
Across the steep valley, the sun was sinking into a nest of tangled violet chem clouds. Ryan figured the temperature was nearly close to freezing. His breath plumed out ahead of him, and the stubbly skin on his cheeks felt tight. The slopes of the hills opposite from the cavern entrance were streaked with snow, and the small pools around the snaking lead-gray river were dulled with ice. Running alongside the slow-moving water, he had been able to make out the shattered remains of a two-lane blacktop, its edge eroded by a century of neglect. Christy Roth's hand rested on his arm. He glanced at the woman, smiling at her startling beauty, his eye almost dazzled by the bright crimson of her tumbling hair.
It's dark.
What's wrong?
When we came out of the gateway, he was throwing up. His face looked like parchment. Lori took him back into the main redoubt entrance to sit him down.
Ryan sucked on a tooth, looking to his left, where the original road to the concealed fortress had been destroyed, either by a landslip or the nuking that had devastated the entire length and breadth of the United States nearly 100 years back in 2001. A young boy stood on the rim of the sheer drop, head to one side, as though he were listening to something. The bleak wind tugged at his long hair, blowing it across his face. His hair was whiter than the driven snow, his eyes red as polished rubies, set in sockets of honed ivory.
You hear something, Jack?
Thought I heard something howling, like a banshee back in the swamps.
Jack Lauren hadn't been with Ryan and his party for very long. They'd picked him up in the dank vastness of the Atchafalaya Swamp, in what had once been the state of Louisiana. His slight frame concealed a powerful, wiry strength. Ryan Carter, who was a good judge of such things, figured Jack as one of the most lethal hand-to-hand killers he'd ever seen. And he was only 14 years old. J.B. Dick stepped to the edge of the cliff and joined the young albino, squinting into the distance and concentrating.
Could be a wolf.
Christy Roth's keen hearing enabled her to confirm J.B.'s guess.
Yeah, it's a wolf, all right. And there's more of them, a pack of around a dozen, 4, maybe 5 miles northeast of here.
Ryan hunched his shoulders at the news.
Where in the fire-blasted hell are we, J.B.?
The armorer had a tiny folding sextant in one of the capacious pockets of his dark gray leather coat, with its smart, silky collar of black fur. He pulled the sextant out and looked around, easing back the brim of his beloved fedora, and took the necessary sighting. He pulled a crumpled chart out of a pocket and consulted it.
Near as I can figure it, we seem to have landed north of what they used to call New York State, and that river has to be the Mohawk.
Ryan glanced both ways along what remained of the roadway. Each end had been sliced clean off.
That's why nobody's entered the redoubt.
Uncle Tyus McCann told me how the east and northeast were hard nuked. All the big cities and most power places. There's lots of hot spots.
Check the rad count. Broke mine getting off Wizard Island.
Ryan flicked back the lapel of his coat, moving the end of the weighted silk scarf out of the way. He pressed the on button of the rad counter and listened. The glowing scarlet arrow veered erratically across the scale, wavering uncomfortably into the orange sector.
Warm.
Closing in on hot.
Jack moved back from the rim.
Too late to leave for dark. Be night in less than an hour. Better wait and find a way down in the morning.
Ryan wasn't sure that it was going to be that easy to get off the sheer plateau. When you found a redoubt that hadn't been entered since the long chill had begun, it meant that it was hard to get at. Which generally meant that it was also damned hard to get out of.
Sure. Christy says Doc's sick. We'll all go back in and scout for some food. I saw a shelf of self-heats. Reckon it's soy meat.
He grinned at the look of revulsion on JB's face.
Yeah, I know what you mean, friend. Can't say I like that tepid sludge myself. Let's get in and close off the rad doors. We'll make a clean start in the morning at first light.
The jump had nearly killed them all. All over the Deathlands, which had once been the United States of America, there were a number of hidden fortresses. Ryan Carter had known of these redoubts from his earliest days with the traveling guerrilla leader they called the Traitor. But only in the past few weeks had Ryan learned of the other, more secret uses of these redoubts. Many of them concealed a small security fortress within the main complex, which was called a gateway. The key to these installations had been Dr. Theophilus Tanner, Doc, a scrawny old man in tattered clothes who seemed incredibly to have come from the pre-nuke era. Doc's brains had been scrambled by some horrific experiences, but every now and again he came out with pearls of arcane wisdom that puzzled and fascinated Brian Carter. And the most bewildering concerned something called Project Cerberus. Eventually, Ryan and Christie had stumbled upon the secret of Doc Tanner. Back in the late 1990s, only a few years before the civilized world vanished in the war that ended all wars, American and Russian scientists were working on ways of moving human beings through space and through time. In the United States, this was Project Cerberus. In maximum security labs, attempts were made to trawl a living person from the past. Many attempts were made, and some of the results were ghastly, but eventually, one had succeeded. Dr. Tanner was born in South Stratford, Vermont, on February 14, 1868. He married in 1891 and had been successfully time-trawled and brought forward, alive, to the fading end of the 20th century. Doc proved so unstable and difficult that he was eventually sent forward on a cron jump, this time ending up in the heart of the Deathlands. His mind constantly tottered on the brink of madness, with only the occasional shard of crystal-clear memory remaining. But slowly things had improved. His memory had grown stronger, and he had been able to give Ryan information about Cerberus, about the gateways, and how they could be set for Matrans jumps. But the secret of time travel was still locked somewhere in the back of Doc's ravaged mind. With his help, the group had been able to make a number of Matrans leaps, going from Alaska to Louisiana in the blink of an eye. But not all of the gateways remained undamaged. Doc had warned that their operation was completely unpredictable, and that there remained the possibility they might jump to a gateway that was under 1,000 feet of rock